Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Pete Musto, Dorothy Gundy, and Anne Ball. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Pete Musto.
In the United States, half of all adults consider fake news a major problem, a new study finds. And these Americans mostly blame politicians and activists for the problem. Researchers questioned over 6,000 Americans about their ideas on fake news stories, those reports and videos created to trick or misinform people. The Pew Research Center released their findings earlier this month. The study showed that a majority of U.S. adults believe reporters have the responsibility for fixing fake news and reporting the facts. Differences in political ties are a major influence in how adults think about fake news, the report noted. People who identified themselves as Republican Party members were more likely than Democratic Party members to blame reporters for the problem.
In recent years, Russian agents and others have led misinformation campaigns aimed at weakening democratic systems in the United States and Europe. This has led to the involvement of politicians, civil rights activists, and technology companies in the question of how to deal with made-up or misleading stories. The Pew Research Center said that 68% of U.S. adults believe fake news affects belief in government institutions. Misinformation was listed more often as a major problem than sexism, racism, illegal immigration, or terrorism. Pew did not try to explain the definition of made-up news and information. But some questions in the study defined it as information meant to mislead the public. As for who is to blame for false or misleading stories, those questioned were able to name more than one group as responsible. 57% blamed U.S. political leaders and the people who work for them. 53% said activist groups were responsible. Reporters and foreign actors, such as Russia, each got the blame from more than a third of those questioned.
Republicans were more likely than Democrats to report seeing made-up news stories and were less likely to believe it could be fixed. Pew noted that Republicans are often more distrustful of the media and more likely to think reporting is one-sided. The Associated Press, or AP, says U.S. President Donald Trump often makes statements that are not always based on fact. Yet he often accuses media businesses of making up news stories he does not like. He has often been critical of the broadcaster CNN and praises Fox News. Earlier this month, he called CNN fake news and even suggested a boycott of its parent company, AT&T. Nina Jankowicz is a researcher at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. She told the AP that Trump often sees anything that might be politically damaging to himself as made up or fake news. I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of transferred to his followers as well, she added. Republicans take the idea of made-up news to mean news that is critical of Trump instead of totally false stories, notes Yochai Benkler. He is a Harvard University law professor who wrote a book on misinformation and the media.
Like Trump, nearly 60% of Republicans were more likely to blame reporters for fake news, while 20% of Democrats felt the same way. Republicans were also far more likely to believe that reporters adding their own opinions into stories was a big problem. About half of Republicans and Democrats alike said they have unknowingly shared fake news. And about 1 in 10 said they have shared stories they already knew were untrue. The U.S. government has pressured Facebook, Google, and other technology companies to remove misinformation from their services. But over half of Americans in the study said that reporters have the biggest responsibility to reduce made-up stories. It's surprising that people didn't think the technology sector and the government should be responsible, Jankowicz said. It is surprising because news reporting has its limits in its ability to prevent the spread of fake news, she added. As someone who specializes in disinformation, I know that fact-checking doesn't always work, Jankowicz said. Readers are more likely to remember incorrect information than the correction, she said. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
And I'm Pete Musto.
Dragonfish live deep down in the dark ocean and are frightening-looking creatures. Their sharp, transparent teeth help them survive in the hostile environment. The cause of their see-through teeth has long been a mystery. But scientists say they have an answer. In the near black deep water, a substance covering the teeth prevents any light from reflecting off the teeth surface. This helps a dragonfish hide their big teeth from creatures it wants to eat. The mouth is invisible and the prey is caught more easily, said scientist Mark Andre Myers of the University of California, San Diego. He led the research, which was published this month in the journal Matter. Dragonfish have teeth similar to humans and other animals. They are made up of an outer layer of enamel and an inner layer of hard, dense, bony tissue called dentin. But in a dragonfish, the material has been reorganized. In the fish teeth enamel are extremely small crystals, and in the dentin, scientists found extremely small pieces of a protein called collagen. If such structures were larger, they would make light scatter. But because they are so small, light passes with ease. The teeth are also very thin. Together, these differences prevent any light that may be in the deep water from reflecting off the tooth surface. This makes it easier for the dragonfish to hunt in the waters. The researchers found the fish in depths of up to 1,000 meters in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of California. Dragonfish are small, long, and black. They grow to be about 25 centimeters long. In the deep water, dragonfish attract smaller fish to their big open mouths with beard-like attachments that have a light on the end. I'm Ann Ball.
Melanoma is an often deadly skin cancer that can develop when a person spends too much time in the sun without protection. But medical doctors now say the disease can form even with little time out in the sun. Melanomas can occur anywhere on the body, not only in areas that get a lot of sun, Dr. Kusi Pan told Reuters by email. She said the most common place for melanoma in men is the back, while for women, it is their legs. In a new study, Pan and co-writer Robert Michelli warn about the danger of melanoma. They say it makes for only about 1% of skin cancers, but causes the majority of skin cancer deaths. Their research recently appeared in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. More than 90% of melanomas are caused by too much ultraviolet radiation. They said the radiation could come from the sun or from special sun lamps used at tanning salons, places people go to darken their skin. The two researchers note that radiation from the sun is not the main cause of some melanomas on body parts like the hands, the bottom of feet, and the inside of noses. Instead, they say, the cancer's development may more closely look like how non-skin cancers form. Pan said cases of melanoma have been rising over the last 30 years. It is estimated that 192,300 new cases are expected in the United States in 2019. Pan added that the disease can affect anyone with any skin color. Older people, those with skin markings called moles, and people with a family history of melanoma are especially at risk, however. The first sign of a melanoma is an unusual-looking mole or freckle, said Pan. But she warned that in one of every 10 melanoma patients, the melanoma may have no color at all and is difficult to notice. These unpigmented melanomas may be pinkish-looking, reddish, purple, normal skin color, or clear and colorless, said Dr. Ronald Moy. He is a skin specialist from Beverly Hills, California, and a spokesman for the Skin Cancer Foundation. Moy said in an email that these unpigmented melanomas can look like other forms of skin cancer. Even worse, they can be mistaken for harmless moles or scars. This is especially dangerous because early detection is critical for successfully treating melanoma. Prevention and early detection are key, said Dr. Emily Newsom, who is with UCLA Health in Los Angeles, California. Skin specialists advise people to use sunscreen repeatedly and to wear sun protective clothing and a wide hat to cover one's face. Dr. Jeffrey Farma leads the Melanoma and Skin Cancer Program at Fox Chase Cancer Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He said researchers have made tremendous breakthroughs in learning about the genes involved in melanoma. As a result, researchers have been able to treat advanced melanoma and improve the survival rate.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We look at the presidential election campaign of 1952. President Harry Truman decided not to seek re-election. The continuing war in Korea and economic problems at home had cost him the support of many Americans. His Democratic Party needed a new candidate for president. In the spring of 1952, Harry Truman offered his support to Adlai Stevenson. Stevenson, however, said he was not interested in any job except the one he had as governor of Illinois. Someone asked what he would do if the Democratic Party chose him anyway as its presidential candidate. Stevenson jokingly answered that he would have to shoot himself. So President Truman and other party leaders discussed different candidates. Each one, however, seemed to have some political weakness. The Republican Party was also discussing possible candidates. It was much easier for the Republicans to choose. Earlier, General Dwight Eisenhower had said he would be interested in running for president. Eisenhower was the highly respected commander of Allied forces in Europe during World War II. Many members of both parties supported Ike, as he was popularly known. Eisenhower agreed to campaign as a Republican. His closest competitor for the Republican nomination was Robert Taft. Taft was a senator from Ohio and the son of a former president, William Howard Taft. Senator Taft had strong support among Republicans for his conservative positions. But he did not receive enough votes at the party's national convention to defeat Eisenhower for the nomination. In his acceptance speech, Eisenhower told the delegates,
"Ladies and gentlemen, you have summoned me on behalf of millions of your fellow Americans to lead a great crusade for freedom in America and freedom in the world. I know something of the solemn responsibility of leading a crusade. I take up this task, therefore, in a spirit of deep obligation, mindful of its burdens and of its decisive importance. I accept your summons. I will lead this crusade."
Eisenhower chose Senator Richard Nixon of California as his running mate for vice president. Nixon was known for strongly opposing communism.
"I am holding in my hand a microfilm of very highly confidential secret State Department documents. These documents were fed out of the State Department over 10 years ago by communists who were employees of that department and who were interested in seeing if these documents were sent to the Soviet Union, where the interests of the Soviet Union happened to be in conflict with those of the United States."
Earlier, as a member of the House of Representatives, Richard Nixon had led the investigation of a former State Department official, Alger Hiss. Hiss was accused of helping to provide secret information to the Soviet Union. He denied the accusation and was never charged with spying. But he was tried and found guilty of lying to a grand jury and was sentenced to prison. Democrats opened their presidential nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois, 10 days after the Republicans closed theirs in the same city. Illinois Governor Adlai Stevenson welcomed the delegates, but still seemed like he did not want to run for president. That only made the delegates want him even more. They were unable to choose a nominee on the first two votes. Then, on the third vote, a majority of the delegates chose Adlai Stevenson, and he accepted. He urged Democrats to campaign with honor.
Let's talk sense to the American people. Let's tell them the truth, that there are no gains without pains, that we are now on the eve of great decisions, not easy decisions, like resistance when you're attacked, but a long, patient, costly struggle which alone can assure triumph over the great enemies of man, war, poverty, and tyranny, and the assaults upon human dignity, which are the most grievous consequences of each.
A political observer described the differences between Adlai Stevenson and Dwight Eisenhower this way. Stevenson was a man of thought. Eisenhower was a man of action. The Republican Party hired an advertising agency to design a campaign to sell Eisenhower and Nixon to the American public.
The man from Abilene, out of the heartland of America, out of this small frame house in Abilene, Kansas, came a man, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Through the crucial hour of historic D-Day, he brought us to the triumphant peace of VE Day. Now another crucial hour in our history. The big question.
General, if war comes, is this country really ready?
It is not. We haven't enough tanks for the fighting in Korea. It is time for a change.
The nation, haunted by the stalemate in Korea, looks to Eisenhower. Eisenhower knows how to deal with the Russians. He has met Europe's leaders, has got them working with us. Elect the number one man for the number one job of our time. November 4th, vote for peace. Vote for Eisenhower.
Adlai Stevenson was known as an intellectual, an egghead. He dismissed some traditional political advisors and replaced them with fellow eggheads when he launched his campaign. The biggest issue in the 1952 campaign was communism. Stevenson said America needed to guard against it. Yet, he repeatedly criticized the actions of Senator Joseph McCarthy. For years, the senator from Wisconsin had been denouncing government officials and others as communists. Eisenhower did not criticize McCarthy, even when the senator accused Eisenhower's good friend and fellow World War II hero, General George Marshall, of being a traitor. The Republican campaign went smoothly until Nixon faced a campaign finance dispute. The vice presidential candidate was under pressure to withdraw. That led to Nixon's famous Checkers speech. He made the speech on national television on September 23, 1952. In it, he denied any wrongdoing. He defended his actions regarding the disputed funds and his decision to keep a special gift from a political supporter.
One other thing I probably should tell you, because if I don't, they'll probably be saying this about me too. We did get something, a gift, after the election. A man down in Texas heard Pat on the radio mention the fact that our two youngsters would like to have a dog. And believe it or not, the day before we left on this campaign trip, We got a message from the Union Station in Baltimore saying they had a package for us. We went down to get it. You know what it was? It was a little Cocker Spaniel dog in a crate that he'd sent all the way from Texas. Black and white, spotted. And our little girl, Tricia, the six-year-old, named it Checkers. And you know, the kids, like all kids, love the dog. And I just want to say this right now, that regardless of what they say about it, we're going to keep it.
The speech was a major success. Many Republicans voiced support for Nixon to stay on as Eisenhower's running mate. And Eisenhower agreed. A few weeks before the election, Eisenhower made a powerful speech. He talked about ending the war in Korea.
Now, where will a new administration begin? It will begin with its president taking a firm, simple resolution. That resolution will be to forego the diversions of politics and to concentrate on the job of ending the Korean War until that job is honorably done. That job requires a personal trip to Korea. Only in that way could I learn how best to serve the American people in the cause of peace. I shall go to Korea.
Adlai Stevenson also gave a powerful speech before the election. In it, he told of seeing an America where no man fears to think as he pleases or say what he thinks. An America where no man is another's master, where no man's mind is dark with fear. Adlai Stevenson spoke of a nation at peace with the world, an America as the horizon of human hopes. Americans voted in November. Eisenhower won almost 34 million votes. That was more than any other presidential candidate had ever received. Stevenson won about 27 million votes. Dwight Eisenhower was sworn in as America's 34th president in January of 1953. He was 62 years old. Many problems awaited the new Republican president. Republicans had only a small majority in Congress. Many of them were very conservative and unlikely to support many of Eisenhower's programs. The cost of living in America was rising. Senator Joseph McCarthy was still hunting communists, and the war was still being fought in Korea. But Ike had a lot of experience serving his country. Dwight Eisenhower came from a large family in Abilene, Kansas. They did not have much money. He received a free university education when he was appointed to attend the United States Military Academy at West Point in New York State. He remained in military service for many years. He was a top Army officer by the time the United States entered World War II in 1941. In June of 1944, he led the Allied D-Day invasion of Europe. In 1950, President Truman named him Supreme Commander of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. When Dwight Eisenhower ran for president, supporters shouted, "I like Ike." People liked him because he always seemed calm under pressure. As president, one of the first pressures he would have to deal with was the continuing war in Korea.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.